Welcome to Nightlights. This is David Brent Johnson, and for the next hour, we'll be playing some exciting music from a transitional moment in jazz history as musicians of the swing era encountered the new sounds of artists such as Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker. It's Bop Go the Big Bands, coming up on this edition of Nightlights.
Thank you.
Claude Thornhill with Donna Lee, and before that, Dizzy Gillespie with Our Delight. We're playing music from an era when the big bands were forced to answer the challenge of bebop on this edition of Nightlights. Bebop was another musical language, a far cry rhythmically and harmonically from the 4/4 world of swing, demanding greater technical agility and more complex melodic constructions. And when players such as Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, and others began to introduce it into the jazz scene in the early 1940s, a younger generation of musicians was revolutionized, and an older one by turns disgruntled, terrified, or sometimes intrigued. The big bands and their leaders, still dominating the commercial scene, were uncertain as to how to incorporate, if at all, these new sounds, and some of the earliest efforts remain undocumented. The Earl Hines Orchestra of 1943 is the most famous example. It was a band that included both Parker and Gillespie, but the American Federation of Musicians recording band inadvertently ensured that this ensemble would leave no historical audio evidence, and so far no air shots or broadcast have emerged. Hines's singer, Billy Eckstein, left the band around that time and formed his own orchestra, and we do have studio evidence of that band, considered to be one of the most important incubators of big band bebop. In addition to Parker and Gillespie, its sidemen included Miles Davis, Fats Navarro, Art Blakey, and Dexter Gordon. Well, here's some music from that orchestra after listening to a piece that the 19-year-old pianist and arranger Ralph Burns wrote for Charlie Barnett in the early 1940s. It's called The Moose, and it features the young bebop pianist Dodo Marmorosa. Gunther Schoeller, in his book The Swing Era, says of this recording, modern big band jazz was born, or at least baptized. Well, it is certainly true that Parker and Gillespie were the real harbingers of that rhythmic revolution that eventually irreversibly transformed jazz under the name of bop, with its razor-sharp rhythmic distinctions and blazingly fast tempos. Burns' role as a translator of these new intimations into an orchestral conception should not be underestimated. Here's Charlie Barnett's big band with Dodo Marmorosa on piano doing The Moose on Nightlights.
Myself, I stay in the mood for you. 'cause I just can't help myself. You always fooling around, giving my love to somebody else. I stay in the mood for you, and I see you everywhere I go. I stay in the mood for you, and I see you everywhere I go. If something soon don't happen, my heart will break, I know. You've got a new kind of loving, it sure makes a man feel good. You've got a new kind of loving, it sure makes a man feel good. You've just got that certain something, now I hope I'm understood. You said that you love me, said that you'd be true. Now you're telling strangers I was just some fool you knew. But I stay in the mood for you, 'cause I just can't help myself. Come back to me, pretty baby, I'm tired of sleeping by myself. Thank you.
Billy Eckstein in 1944 doing Opus X, and from that same year we also heard Eckstein's band doing I Stay in the Mood for You from the 2-CD Savoy set, the legendary big band of Billy Eckstein, starting off that set with Charlie Barnett and the Moose from 1943 from the Decca CD Drop Me Off in Harlem. We heard some Dizzy Gillespie solo work in those Billy Eckstein pieces, and one of the most influential bop-oriented big bands of the 1940s was his post-World War II orchestra. Gillespie employed musicians such as drummer Kenny Clarke, saxophonist Sonny Stitt, and pianist John Lewis, and he used the work of modern arrangers such as Walter Fuller and Tad Dameron. The results show the speed and soloing techniques of bebop instrumentalists translated into the context of a large orchestra. Gillespie also introduced Afro-Cuban elements into his big band bop, creating a highly dramatic sound captured on both studio and live recordings. We hear the Gillespie band playing what's now considered to be a modernistic masterpiece, as well as music from the Boyd Rayburn Orchestra, another important laboratory for bebop in the big band world in the 1940s, with Dizzy sitting in playing his own composition. First, here's Gillespie's big band in 1946 doing the appropriately titled Things to Come on Nightlights.
And now nothing could surprise me. I wouldn't even raise my eyebrows if Dizzy Gillespie walked in and said, "Hello, Ernie Whitman."
"Hello, Ernie Whitman."
"Eyebrows as you were, Will. Started me to a tuba and let me double in brass. Well, latch me on to a bull fiddle and call us Siamese twins. If it ain't the big blue himself, Mr. D. Gillespie." "Well, what brings you to Hot Horn Hall this PM, Mr. G?"
"Well, I just happened to be walking through the corridor, Ernie, and as I passed this door, my trumpet made a sharp left, and here I am."
"Well, D.G., where your trumpet leads, we shall follow. What are you going to decipher for your faraway fans?"
"I'd like to blow them a bundle of specs and spots I put together myself. It's been recorded as A Night in Tunisia."
"Well, it's Dizzy's original arrangement for the Rayburn Clan, so filch our air and filter it." Thank you.
West Coast trumpeter Gerald Wilson, leading one of the most modern progressive bands around in the mid-1940s with his take on a bebop anthem, Dizzy Gillespie's Groovin' High, from the box set Central Avenue Sounds. For that, Dizzy Gillespie himself sitting in with Boyd Rayburn's orchestra on a 1946 broadcast of Gillespie's A Night in Tunisia, a Jubilee broadcast with none other than Ernie Bubbles Whitman as the MC. No mistaking that voice for anybody else. That comes from a CD called Jubilee Broadcast 1946 under Boyd Rayburn's name. And we start off with Dizzy Gillespie doing Things to Come, 1946 recording from the set Odyssey, 1945 through 1952. We'll have more jazz from the big band bebop era in just a few moments. Production support for Nightlights comes from the Laughing Planet Cafe and Soma Coffee House, offering San Francisco-style burritos, coffee drinks, fresh juices, and 100% fruit smoothies, and including locally grown and organic ingredients on the corner of Kirkwood and Grant in Bloomington, Indiana. This is David Brent Johnson, and you're listening to Nightlights. David Brent Johnson here with you on Nightlights. This Nightlight show, Bop Go the Big Bands, will be archived on our website at nightlights.indiana.edu, where there are more than 120 previous programs available for you to listen to anytime, day or night. The mid to late 1940s posed a number of challenges for big bands, in addition to the stylistic advances of bebop. Even as multitudes of musicians returned from serving in the military with hopes of retaining the pay and employment of previous times, ominous things were happening for the jazz world. There was the dismantling of the wartime defense industry, which had sponsored many big band performances. There was the emergence of television in the late 1940s. And there were some big band TV shows, Kay Kaiser, the Dorsey Brothers in the mid-1950s, and eventually the most popular, of course, Lawrence Welk, which seems to live on forever on public broadcasting. But a lot of these shows didn't do very well, and many other popular culture icons couldn't make the switch. Walter Winchell, who was such a force on the radio, was pretty much a flop on the tube. You also had the retention of the wartime 20% entertainment cabaret tax, which made live music very expensive. More people staying at home, settling down, saving money, raising families, just trying to find a place to live. There was a housing shortage going on. There was inflation, with price controls being lifted in 1946. Divorce rates were skyrocketing. And Gene Lees makes an interesting argument in one of his essays that the demise of public transportation systems that ferried teenagers to dance halls had an impact too. A big factor was the rise of popular singers such as Frank Sinatra and Dinah Shore, making it on their own without regular big bands to support them. One of the few bands to thrive, at least for a while in the face of these changes, was the Woody Herman Orchestra, and it was also a band that progressively incorporated bebop more and more into its sound. Herman had disbanded for a while in late 1946, but he'd done so for personal reasons. His band was actually doing quite well at the time. Within a year, he reformed. Ralph Burns, of whom we spoke earlier, was a key writer and arranger for Herman, and the so-called Second Herd, a Four Brothers band in particular, employed bop-savvy musicians such as Serge Shaloff. We'll hear a 1949 recording by the Second Herd that features tenor saxophonist Gene Ammons and a variation on the bebop vehicle How High the Moon, as well as the Second Herd's recording of Burns's and Shorty Rogers' Keen and Peachy. Here's Woody Herman on Nightlights. We'll be right back. Woody Herman's 1947 recording of Keen and Peachy, a Bop variant on Fine and Dandy from the CD Blowing Up a Storm. For that, we heard the Herman Band in 1949 doing More Moon, a Bop variant on How High the Moon, featuring Gene Ammons from the CD Keeper of the Flame. Another problem that the big bands faced in the post-World War II era was the introduction of hard drugs into the jazz world. A number of very talented musicians, such as trumpeter Sonny Berman from the Woody Herman Big Band, died at tragically young ages. The Herman Band, in fact, was notorious for nearly half of its members sometimes showing up late, not showing up at all, or if they did, then nodding off on the bandstand. And bebop was also considered not as danceable. It was more of a listener's music. And African-American audiences were beginning to gravitate more towards jump blues and what would come to be known as R&B, which also led to something that would distract much of jazz's potential white audience, rock and roll. Going to hear now from a band leader who led a successful orchestra before World War II, pianist Claude Thornhill, composer of the standard Snowfall. Thornhill reorganized after the end of the war and used arrangers such as Gil Evans to create a modernistic palette that certainly reflected the impact of bebop. And in fact, several of the band's recordings are of Charlie Parker compositions, one of which we'll hear in just a moment. His band helped set the template for the so-called cool sound as well, which would be developed by Evans, Miles Davis, and others as the bop band era came to an end. Thornhill's post-war band would wane in popularity, but it had a historical impact in its influence upon other musicians. We'll also hear from Les Brown, whose late 1940s Band of Renown, like many other orchestras that had been commercially successful, took on a boppish tinge. First, here's Claude Thornhill's big band doing Charlie Parker's Yardbird Suite on Nightlights. Thank you.
boiling hot is this Frank Comstock original by Les Brown and the orchestra. It's titled Something Cool.
Les Brown in 1949 doing Something Cool from the Uncollected Les Brown Volume 2. Before that, Claude Thornhill in 1947 doing Charlie Parker's Yardbird Suite from 1946 through 1947 performances, Volume 2. Two other band leaders who'd led successful pre-war bands, hugely successful pre-war bands, were clarinetist Benny Goodman and Artie Shaw. Goodman briefly experimented with a bop-oriented band in the late 1940s, and Shaw organized one in 1949. Although Goodman, like many others from his generation, was not always at ease with the harmonies of bebop, his friendship with the young clarinetist Stan Hasselgaard had helped open his musical mind to the new developments in jazz. Shaw did not profess to be incorporating bebop into his sound. He commented that, "I hate the categories we insist upon fitting things into. I don't know what you mean by bebop. If you mean what's played by Dizzy Gillespie and his group, that's fine music." Shaw's manager identified the band's new book as material written in the modern groove. We won't call it bop. But as writer Dick Sudhalter notes, bop it was. We'll hear Shaw's band doing one such number after this 1949 Benny Goodman big band recording, written and arranged by Chico O'Farrell, Undercurrent Blues on Nightlights. We'll be right back. Artie Shaw's big band in 1949 doing Aesop's Foibles from the CD simply titled 1949 Al Kahn on tenor sax there. Before that, Benny Goodman doing the title track recorded in 1949 from the Capitol release Undercurrent Blues. Benny Goodman would soon abandon bop, and Artie Shaw would abandon active performance and composition of music altogether by 1954. And even though the bop revolution ultimately failed to help save the big bands from their commercial decline, it stamped the music in such a way that it would never sound the same again, and its influence is still prevalent today. We'll close with bebop's greatest purveyor, Charlie Parker, playing with the Woody Herman Big Band live in 1951, doing Jimmy Giuffre's bop band anthem Four Brothers on Nightlights.
Thank you.
Charlie Parker with the Woody Herman Big Band in Kansas City in 1951 doing Four Brothers from the CD Bird with the Herd. Thanks for tuning into this edition of Nightlights. You can listen to previous Nightlights programs and view playlists on our website at nightlights.indiana.edu. Production support for Nightlights comes from the Laughing Planet Cafe and Soma Coffee House, offering San Francisco-style burritos, coffee drinks, fresh juices, and 100% fruit smoothies, and including locally grown and organic ingredients on the corner of Kirkwood and Grant in Bloomington, Indiana. Nightlights is engineered by Michael Paskesh and produced in the studios of WFIU at Indiana University in Bloomington, Indiana. This is David Brent Johnson wishing you good listening for the week ahead.